1370 KFCF in Fresno and online at kpfa.org. Please stay tuned for a rude awakening. This is A Rude Awakening. I'm Sabrina Jacobs. On today's show, I'll be in conversation with the chair and vice chair of Bion USA, Bernadette Ellerin and Rhonda Romero, respectively, on the positive peace talks in Oslo, Norway, to end the 40 years of conflict and the subsequent violence that has ensued in the Philippines. Stay tuned. For those of you who don't know about the 40-year internal conflict in the Philippines between the neocolonial powers that have catered to the United States on every level and the People's Movement for Social and Economic Equality, it will hopefully be coming to an end in the coming months. For the first time ever since the peace talks began nearly 30 years ago, both sides are closer to an agreement than they've ever been in the past, after having yet another sit-down, this time in Oslo, Norway, last month. And on the line to talk to us about the peace talks in Oslo, where they are at this point, is Bernadette Ellerin, and she is the chair of Bion USA, and Rhonda Romero, who is the vice chair of Bion USA. Ladies, thank you so much for being on A Rude Awakening.
Thanks, Sabrina.
Thank you for having us.
All right. So, Rhonda, let's go ahead and start with you. Now, you already spoke with Kevin Pina on Flashpoints last week, and I definitely want to reference that particular show because you definitely went into the background as far as the 40-year conflict, internal conflict that's been happening in the Philippines. Can you just give us a quick overview of the history of this particular conflict?
Yes, thanks. So there is an ongoing civil war in the Philippines. It's between the revolutionary forces of the Communist Party of the Philippines, waged by the New People's Army, and for the peace talks, represented by the National Democratic Front. So a large, broad front of revolutionary organizations, all sectors of society, who have been fighting what really they consider the ongoing war since the turn of the last century. Against U.S. imperialism and the local reactionaries who are basically puppets of U.S. imperialism. The conflict is about the deep poverty in the country, the gross inequality, the lack of democracy, and, you know, the lack of people to have any kind of opportunities due to the systemic oppression of the country by U.S. imperialism, and then the local big landlords, the, you know, politicians who are from family dynasties that have been running the country since nominal independence in the 1940s. And so the revolutionary forces are fighting for, you know, what we all deserve, full human rights, a free country, our own industries, you know, land for the people who till it, the ability for families to be able to put food on the table, and not just the elite families, but everybody in the country, and, you know, freedom from, you know, having U.S. bases on your land, having foreign corporations own the choicest lands and run plantations, extract the resources, and take them away for profit while leaving the people poor.
All right. Now, let's just name the players here that were present at the talks. The government of the Philippines and the National Democratic Front of the Philippines, representatives from the GPH, government of the Philippines, Secretary Jesus Duresa, and for the National Democratic Front of the Philippines, Professor Jose Maria Sison. Now, those folks were present in Oslo. You just went over briefly what the issues are. This is one of the longest-running armed conflicts in the world, 40 years, with negotiations having been attempted for the last 30 years. What type of let's talk about the land. You know, because it's, I don't know about you guys, but the way I was raised, it's like, okay, that's how you define who you are, is with how much land you have, or if you can have land, if you can own land. What are the agrarian issues that that the people of the Philippines, or the poor people of the Philippines, are facing? Let's go ahead and have you field that question, Bernadette.
Yes, the majority of the Filipino people in the country, it's about 80 million people, Filipinos in the Philippines, and most of them are rural communities. So their main livelihood is coming off of the land, literally living off of the land. The main problem is that because of the way the economy is structured, agricultural production is very backward, and the people who live off the land don't have any control over keeping what they till, and they're completely beholden to a government system that is dominated by big despotic landlords who actually ensure that all the profits from the land go to a minute ratio of families, of landlord families. So the vast majority of the Philippine people live in abject poverty. So that's the main condition for the majority of Filipino people who live off of agricultural production.
Okay, my God. And now some of the other issues, there's lack of public education, overall social injustice, of course, like you said, poverty. During the 5 days of these talks, some of the agenda points included reaffirmation of previous peace agreements, reconstitution of the list of personnel covered by the joint agreement on safety and immunity guarantees. Now, what does that second one mean, reconstitution of the list of personnel covered by the joint agreement on safety and immunity guarantees? Rhonda, can you tell us what that's about?
Sure. So in order to come to the table and feel safe there, you have to have guarantees that you won't have, that the revolutionary forces will be safe, that the government won't basically play a trick and then just arrest people at the table, literally, which has happened. So this agreement provides the kind of confidence-building measures that are needed in order for both sides to come as equals to negotiations and to, you know, guarantee their immunity from being apprehended. It's very basic and yet essential for the talks to continue. Over the years, the government of the Philippines has violated this agreement. They've actually picked up on false charges, people who are NDF negotiators or NDF consultants who were doing their work of research and, you know, preparing documents for the peace talks, and you have picked them up on trumped up charges and sometimes not even any clear charges and placed them in jail. And that's actually the situation we have right now with over 500 political prisoners. And for a time over the past couple of years, at least 22 of them were NDF consultants who were supposed to have been protected under the joint agreement for safety and immunity guarantees. And so this reconstitution of the list, affirmation of the people on it and who should have this immunity is really important.
Most definitely. Safety first. My goodness. Safety first. And now I just want to remind everybody that we're speaking to Bernadette Ellerin. Well, that was the voice of Rhonda Romero, Vice Chair of BIAN USA. And we also have Bernadette Ellerin, Chair of BIAN USA. Now, Bernadette, let's talk about this latest situation, what has happened in the last week. There was some type of explosion. What has happened in the last week since the talks were started?
Yeah, unfortunately, last September 2, a bomb explosion took place at the night market in Davao City while President Rodrigo Duterte was visiting the city that he was the former mayor of for over 22 years. And what has been reported in the media is that a group by the name of the Abu Sayyaf has claimed responsibility for the bombing. The Abu Sayyaf came into the public arena in the corporate media back in 2001 when they committed a series of kidnappings of tourists in Mindanao and ended up killing several of them. So they are tagged as an Islamic fundamentalist group sowing terror in the Philippines, and that is why the U.S. has been engaged in a interventionist campaign under the auspices of anti-terrorism in the Philippines and particularly in Mindanao.
Okay, now President Rodrigo Duterte, now he's a socialist. He's a socialist president who was democratically elected. How is he dealing with, or has he been a positive force, I should ask, as far as pushing for these peace talks? Bernadette, can you go ahead and field that?
Yeah, well, we credit President Rodrigo Duterte for being the first Philippine president to actually take definitive action to fully resume the formal talks that had been stalled and thwarted by the previous president of the Philippines. And while he proclaims himself to be a socialist, he has yet to really prove that in action. But we do recognize that even when he was a politician in Mindanao for many, many decades, he was different in many ways, in the sense that he challenged U.S. intervention in Mindanao. He rejected requests to build U.S. drone facilities in Davao City. He also criticized covert CIA operations in Mindanao, including bomb planting. So he's been a vocal critic of U.S. intervention in Mindanao, and we're hoping that that will translate to action as the president of the Philippines as well. I will say that though he was not the handpicked candidate of the U.S., which usually to become the president of the Philippines, you have to be handpicked by the U.S., President Duterte remains a non-traditional president of a traditionally neocolonial government. So while he may be different, the rest of the machinery of the Philippine government is more or less consolidated to uphold U.S. neocolonial interests in the Philippines.
So do you think that they, or his own staff, I guess you could say, or his own administration was behind the bombing?
Well, we want to point out the hand of the U.S., the very real possibility that the U.S. was behind the bombing, only because the Abu Sayyaf group came out openly as the main perpetrators. The Abu Sayyaf are known to be CIA trained and funded, and they are destabilizing force that the U.S. government has historically used to sow conflict in Mindanao. We cannot dismiss the very real possibility that the U.S. was involved and has an interest in destabilizing the Duterte government and sowing conflict in the region.
All right. Okay, well, stay tuned. We're going to take a little break here. We got a couple of messages from some very famous people who are supporting us here during our financial crisis at KPFA Pacifica Radio. Stay tuned.
This is Chris Hedges. When I'm in Berkeley, I always listen to KPFA because I do not want my news and information given to me through the lens of corporate power. KPFA is an absolutely vital organization within your community, one that keeps journalism alive and gives voice to those who otherwise would have no voice. Please donate what you can today.
Bye.
are back. We are back. We are talking about a very, very, very important issue that's happening in the Philippines, this 40-year conflict that is going on. But there are talks, there are peace talks, moving towards some type of equanimity with the poor people of Philippines and the ruling class and the neocolonialism that's being pushed in Manila. We have Bernadette Ellerin, chair of Bayan USA, and Rhonda Romero, vice chair of Bayan USA, on the line. And now, let's. We just left off with talking about President Duterte, and he is pushing for reform. He almost got killed this past Friday, and there's the Mindanao folks that are trained by the CIA, this whole resistance down in the south that is pushing to create the conflict, keep the conflict going. Were there any representatives for the Mindanao Islamic State in the South Philippines? Were there any of those folks present at the talks in Oslo? Let's see here. Bernadette, go ahead and field that question.
I'm not aware of any representatives of the Moro Islamic Liberation Front that were present during the peace talks in Oslo. But I will say that the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, or the MILF, have also engaged in their own peace talks historically with the GPH, particularly under the previous administration of Benigno Aquino III. And which also led to a so-called peace accord, because there is a big part of Mindanao that is the more or less what we call the Bangsa Moro territories. The Moro people are indigenous to Mindanao, but they're Islamicized, and they're also waging their own struggle of self-determination. And they have been historically used by the U.S.-backed Philippine government as an excuse for more militarization throughout the country under the auspices of fighting terrorism.
Oh my, this is classic. This is classic United States intervention. Classic United States intervention.
Very much so, yes.
Yes, yes. Now, Rhonda, now, can I have you field this question? President Obama, speaking of United States intervention, President Obama has now gotten involved and flexing his arm of diplomacy. What has happened with those talks? What is his involvement?
So President Obama is scheduled to have his first face-to-face meeting with President Duterte on Tuesday, September 6th. We should note that Secretary of State Kerry met with Duterte just a couple of weeks before the talks began. Right after that, the U.S. released its U.S. military aid package to the Philippines. It's higher than it was in previous years. There's a lot of pressure coming from the U.S. on Duterte to not negotiate, because it's not in the interest of U.S. imperialism for there to be peace, for there to be any kind of change in the system. And what the revolutionary forces under the NDF at the negotiating table are asking for or negotiating for are fundamental changes, which would address the root causes of poverty and inequity of the country. So, for example, on the table are these major economic reforms, political reforms, to, you know, change the system of, you know, a few landlord families holding the majority of the wealth, and actually call for redistribution of that land. Political reforms to ensure that you no longer have these military agreements, for example, with the U.S., which allow the U.S. to base troops there, have military bases there, allow nuclear armaments to be in the country, conduct operations on the land in violation of the sovereignty of the country. So those are the kinds of things that are being negotiated. And, you know, we can bet that the U.S. does not want those kinds of reforms to take place. They want to maintain their Pearl of the Orient, the place where they can launch wars of aggression or have this very important geopolitical position as they ensure that they can have this counter force against a rising China, which, you know, seems to be the current boogeyman for U.S. foreign policy. And so we expect that President Obama will bring these things up. in the mainstream media, there's all this talk about him bringing up the summary killings of supposed drug dealers and drug users in the country. And while we think he will bring that up, we are almost sure that he'll bring up some of the, you know, neoliberal economic policies that he'd like to see Duterte continue, and also bring up the issue of increased U.S. military presence in the country.
Looking at the country, I mean, there is abject poverty, and there is insane amounts of wealth. I mean, it's to the point that a lot of the children, the kids, they're not even able to get an education. And then there's been pushes by, you know, domestic organizations like yours, Bayan USA, and other organizations. This is not something that's necessarily lost on mainstream media. It's not something that's necessarily not being reported. But what is the organization Bayan USA seeing with your efforts? Are you seeing a pushback from the United States government? Are you seeing a pushback from the Philippine government? And we're going to have Bernadette go ahead and field that question.
Well, I just want to respond really quickly to your comments about the abject poverty and, I guess, seeming hopelessness in the region, only because I think that there's a lot to be hopeful for because there was a revolutionary movement. And I think that's precisely why the press doesn't cover this reality, is that is because there's a strong, vibrant mass movement and revolutionary movement in the Philippines that is fighting for alternative pro-people and progressive state, which actually exists. The peace talks are not just a negotiation between a government and an army, a people's army. It's a negotiation between two parallel states, a Manila government represented by the Duterte administration, and a people's revolutionary government that exists on the barrio level in 71 out of the 81 provinces in the country, that actually puts into place and puts into practice this pro-people progressive state that provides services and strives for social equity on the ground for the most marginalized and poor. So I think there is a lot of positive things to be hopeful for, because the revolutionary movement has reached a level of development where it can now negotiate on the table, because it has reached that legitimacy to the international community. And for us as Bayan USA, that's something we really want to promote here in the U.S. and for all people who are struggling for liberation, that that this is an inspiration for us, not just as Filipinos, but as people who are seeking freedom in all other parts of the region, other parts of the world. So I think for us, we see ourselves as an extension, integral to a people who are fighting for liberation from systemic national oppression, mainly from U.S. imperialism and local reaction in the Philippines. So I think that message does meet a lot of challenge and pushback from mainly the corporate media, the public narrative on what the Philippines is. Our colonial history has been erased from our history books here in the U.S. The people here in the U.S. are largely prevented from knowing the truth about U.S. foreign policy and its historic impacts, and why people are fighting for liberation overseas, you know. So I think our role here is to really bring that message to the people here who need to hear it the most and be inspired.
Most definitely. Thank you so much for clearing that up, because this is a new story for me. This is a new story. I had no idea that this conflict had been going on for 40 years, almost, 40 plus years now. So thank you so much for clearing that up, Ms. Bernadette Ellerin. Ms. Bernadette Ellerin is the chair of Bayan USA. We also have Rhonda Bermuro. She is the vice chair of Bayan USA. And Rhonda, let's talk about the other latest developments that have happened. These peace talks, they have completed and pretty much landed on a positive note. What is going to be happening in the future, do you think? Or is there a list of things that was brought out as far as these talks were concerned in Oslo?
Well, we're really happy that the talks ended with agreements on both sides, or joint agreements, to continue the negotiations. They have a specific list of dates for upcoming negotiations. The next time they'll be sitting down in Oslo will be October 8th, which coincidentally is the 100th day of President Duterte's administration. And so they'll be back to the negotiating table, and they'll be talking about what many consider to be the meat of the negotiations. The agenda item is the social and economic reforms that need to be put into place to change some of these historic inequities of the country. And so there's many dates leading up to that where both sides are supposed to produce their draft of the social economic reforms they'd like to see. There's supposed to be an exchange of the drafts, deadlines for review and getting back to each other about the draft. So it's actually a very rigorous timeline for between now and October to be discussing the very heart or meat of the negotiations.
All right. So October, now that's October 2nd, is that correct?
October 8th.
October 8th. So this is where they're going to be pushing through with everything that's promised and discussed or has been discussed in Oslo, October 8th. Where can people get more information, Rhonda? Go ahead.
There's a website, JustPeacePH, that's JustPeacePH. And it's a website where you can find out about not only the history, but how to support the ongoing peace process in the Philippines.
My goodness, this has been a lot of information and a rude awakening, if I do say so myself. Thank you so much for the enlightenment. And hey, this is a struggle that is happening all over the world, here in the United States as well. Don't listen to that mainstream media crap. You're going to get the truth here at Pacific Radio KPFA. Ladies, thank you so much for being on A Rude Awakening.
Thank you.
And that does it for another edition of A Rude Awakening. I'm Sabrina Jacobs. Big thank you to my guests, Bernadette Ellerin and Rhonda Romero. And a big thank you to you, community, for showing that you care. We are very close to our pre-fund drive challenge of $50,000. If you haven't been able to give, you'll have your chance from September 7th to September 23rd, or you can go to kpfa.org and grab up one of those wonderful pledge gifts that keep on giving. The lovely Erica Bridgman is on the controls. I'll be back next week at 3 p.m. with Richard Wolinski. So tune in and stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio coming up next. Have a great week, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Your donations have allowed KPFA to continue to broadcast a full schedule of locally produced arts, music, in-depth news, and public affairs programming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Unfortunately, we may not be able to continue as a full-time operation. In recent years, KPFA has lost the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Funding and other outside funding sources that subsidize our finances. These issues have kept our budgets constantly in the red. We've already begun cutting positions and reducing working hours. If we continue down this path, this historic community radio station will just be a shadow of itself. We want to avoid at all costs any days without KPFA. We need your help. We're trying to cover a $50,000 shortfall before our fund drive begins on September 7th. Please join the community of supporters who want to maintain this independent media voice. Please donate today online at kpfa.org. No donation is too small. Again, thank you for your support of 94.1 FM.
It is now 4 o'clock here at KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. Please stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio. One.